You know, sometimes I find myself looking back over the years that I spent with Jesus, and I try to think, was there like a day or a moment that was the pinnacle, the epitome, the picture of how incredible those years were? You know, because I found that life is like a journey that kind of winds its way through a forest that you've never been through before. And sometimes it opens up to a beautiful meadow, and sometimes it leads you to a dangerous place, and sometimes it's dark, and sometimes it's windy, and always it's new and unexpected. It's funny, as I think about the moments with Jesus and all the incredible healings, the incredible miracles, and the powerful messages, and the times when with just a word, he would send a demon fleeing. The day that stands out in my memory, that kind of is a picture of it all, is the day that he spent most of the day sitting down. We had spent the night in a city called Bethany, just outside the capital city of Jerusalem. And he had sent a few of his followers into the town to do something. When they came back early in the morning, they had brought a young colt with them, like a baby donkey. And we thought, oh, nice. And Jesus got on the colt and started riding towards Jerusalem because he'd never done that before. And he loved to do things he'd never done before just to keep us on our toes, I think. And as he's riding towards Jerusalem, what started happening, I mean, it started as a joke. We were joking about, oh, well, at least Jesus won't be tired when we get there. Ha, ha, ha. But we soon realized that there was people coming from the town, not just a few, but like the town of Bethany was coming with us. And there was this rising sort of excitement. And people were not just laughing, they were kind of dancing. And as they were coming from the town, as we got closer and closer to Jerusalem, some ran ahead. And suddenly people started coming from Jerusalem. And so from both sides, this crowd started forming. And it wasn't unusual for crowds to form. That was every day for Jesus. But this crowd was just a crowd of excitement and celebration. And Jesus, the whole time, was riding his donkey. I don't remember anything he said or anything amazing he did, but the sense in that place. And suddenly someone broke into song. Hosanna! Hosanna in the highest! And the whole crowd began singing. And I remember people starting to take off their garments, their outer jackets, and laying them in front of Jesus. So it was like this carpeted entrance into the city. And as more things started to unfold and more people started to come, and it got louder, and there were dancers and there were tambourines, and someone started playing a drum. The other disciples and I started looking around and thinking, I have never experienced anything like this before. But I've heard about it in all the stories of old. When the ancient kings like David and Solomon, King Hezekiah, when they would return from any battle or any conquest, before they made it into the city would empty and welcome home the new king. And here Jesus was riding home into the city of Jerusalem. And it started to dawn on me. Not only that, see, there was this murmuring among the crowd that was threatening Jesus' life, that if he was to enter Jerusalem at any time, they were going to seek to arrest, imprison, and kill him. And here he is riding in the middle of a throng of people right in Jerusalem. Not only that, he came off the colt in the city, and he walked right into the temple. And something about him changed. And he said, my Father's house is to be a house of prayer. And you made it a den of thieves. He shocked everyone. He, in that moment and in that place, in the face of those who were threatening his life, stood up and he began to heal people. And the crowd was formed and people were alive with celebration. And I remember thinking, it's today. It's today. We have waited for a Messiah to restore the kingdom to Israel. It is today. It is today that we've welcomed in our king. It is today he's going to stir up a mutiny against the Romans. It's today. This is happening. There was so much excitement. The other disciples and I would start to talk about it on the side. Do you think it's today? Do you think it's And then you come around the other bend in that forest path, and it's not a meadow of flowers anymore. It turns out it wasn't today. We left Jerusalem and went back and spent the night in Bethany. And he sent others back to Jerusalem to prepare a meal that we were going to eat together with him. It's a meal we call the Passover. It is the biggest celebration of friends and family. It's the biggest celebration of Jews worldwide every single year. It is awesome. And we do it in remembrance of a time way back when God spoke to Moses and was about to lead the children of Israel out of bondage and slavery. And they had this Passover meal. They ate the meal with their cloaks on and their sandals on, ready to go. And the angel of death came and struck down people in the Egyptian nation and spared all of Israel who put the blood of a sacrifice across their doorposts. So we call it the Passover. And there was something weird or off or different about Jesus this time. He was focused. We'd eaten Passover with him before, but I don't remember anything particularly important that happened any time. But this time, he was very intent on saying a lot of things that all seemed very important, and I had a lot of trouble understanding. He started by removing our sandals and coming around like a servant and washing our feet. And we were revolted by the idea. Peter flat out refused to have his feet washed by him. He said, unless I wash your feet, you have no part of me. Well, then not just my feet, do my whole body. That's kind of not how it goes, Peter. He said, I am going away, and where I go, you cannot come. But I am going to prepare a place for you. In my Father's house are many rooms, and I go to prepare a place for you. And if it were not so, I would not be telling you. But I'm going to go, and then I'm going to come and bring you to where I am. He said, I'm like a vine and you're like the branches. Don't ever let the vine and branches be separated, because if we are together, you will bear much fruit. My Father will be glorified. Actually, it's better that I go away, because if I don't go away, the Counselor, the Comforter, the Spirit of Truth will not come. But I'm going to go away and I'm going to send them to you. And he's going to speak what is to come. He's going to tell what he's heard from the Father. He's going to glorify my name. He's going to convict the world in regards to sin and righteousness. It is very good that he comes. So I've got to go. And we were listening intently and we were thinking, what is he talking about? Where is he going? Smile and nod. He went into the sort of formal portion of the evening, and he took the bread from the table. And there are three pieces on the plate. He separated the top, and he pulled the one from the middle, and he held it up like he always did as he would give thanks. Only this time, when he broke it, he said, this is my body, and it is broken for you. Do this in remembrance of me. And we each ate from that one piece of bread and thought, what is he talking about? And then he took a cup of wine and he lifted it up and he said, this is the blood of a new covenant. It is my blood of a covenant I am creating for you. Remember me as often as you drink it. And he passed the one cup around and we drank the cup. And I remember thinking, I understand blood covenants. I understand that there's a sacrifice, but Jesus, there's no bull in the room. There's no goat in the room. There are no turtle doves in the room. There's not even a lamb in the room to be the sacrifice. I don't get it. But I'm listening. And then he sang a hymn, and before we departed, he said something really weird. He said, one of you is going to betray me. I remember Peter looking across the table at me, and I was sitting right beside Jesus, and Peter like gave me the eyes like. So I asked Jesus, Lord, which one is going to betray you? He said, the one who shares this dip with me. Across the table was Judas sitting beside Peter. Judas was kind of looking the other way. He wasn't paying attention and dipped his bread at the exact same moment as Jesus. Peter and I looked at Jesus, looked at the bread, looked at Judas, looked at each other. And then Jesus said, what you're about to do, do quickly. And Judas got up and left. I didn't have a clue what was going on. After the meal, we sang a hymn and we went on a quick kind of journey to a place. It's kind of a secret destination. It's beautiful. I wish I could take you there. There's an olive grove and this place that's called Gethsemane. And it's really only got this one kind of footpath entrance, and it's got these huge kind of rocks on this side that kind of makes a wall. And it's almost like a room with olive trees around, and it's so beautiful, and it's so quiet, and there are always birds. At night, there are crickets. And we came into this place that only Jesus and we disciples knew. It was already getting late, and I was exhausted, and Jesus was really troubled. And so he went off and he said, watch and wait and pray with me. I've always found that the best way to pray is comfortably. So I began to pray. Oh, Lord. And I remember getting woken up by Jesus coming back and saying, can't you watch and pray? Yes, Lord. Absolutely, we can watch and pray. And he went away again, and we prayed again, and we were woken up again. Not just myself, but everyone was falling asleep, and Jesus was visibly like sweating, covered in sweat, and perturbed. Everything about him was in this focused, kind of distant, like he's there but not there kind of way. He says, arise, my betrayer is coming. And as soon as he said that, I started to hear something that wasn't birds and wasn't crickets. And I could see something in the night that wasn't darkness. It was light. It was lamps. It was torches. It was people. It was armor. It was weapons. It was Judas with a lot of well-armed people coming in and saying, Rabbi, and kissing Jesus. And as soon as he did, it was like some kind of signal, because it was like a start went off, and all these soldiers came and surrounded Jesus, and things happened very quickly, and Peter drew a sword. I thought, Peter's got a sword? Drew a sword, and he tried to slash at this man's head, glanced off, caught his ear, cut his ear clean off. Jesus stops Peter, and Jesus stopped the soldiers. Jesus stopped everything to pick up an ear and put it back on a man's head. And I was just staring at the ear. Jesus says, you came for me, let these others go. And the disciples started to scatter all over, and I scattered as well. But we followed the crowd. We followed Jesus into the night. It was dark, and we had to see. We could see. They were easy to follow because we didn't have lights. We could do it kind of sneaky, kind of easy, because they had lanterns and a group of clanking armor men. And the first place they went to was the high priest's father's home. His name's Annas. And they had like this session of accusing him of blasphemy, condemning him to his face, striking him. And then they moved from there to the high priest's home himself, Caiaphas' home. And it was so weird in that moment to see everything spinning out of control when just days before we had been marching in all this victory, and now things were spinning out of control. The Jesus who I watched silence every question so his enemies were scared to ask was now being asked questions, and he was not answering. Switched. The Jesus who I saw walk through crowds of angry people who sought to harm him, and he just walked right through them, was now surrounded by an angry crowd and doing nothing. They didn't stop at the home of Caiaphas. They marched right up to the home of the governor of the Romans. You only involve the Romans in Jewish affairs when you want something really serious to happen. And so they brought him to the home of this Roman governor. His name's Pilate. And Pilate stood on his big entranceway and looked down on this crowd of Jews and said, what do you want? And they handed over Jesus of Nazareth. So what fault, what charges against him? Well, if he wasn't worthy of death, then we wouldn't have brought him to you to bother you. Obviously, he's worthy of death. Why is he worthy of death? That's the question. And he talks with Jesus on the side and brought him out again and talks with Jesus again and brought him out again and said, this is what I'll do. Every year I offer up a free prisoner to go free. Why don't I let this year be this Jesus, this king of the Jews? He's not our king. Give us Barabbas. Barabbas? Fine. Flog him. Flog him. That's a short word with a long description. They call it the 39 lashes or the 40 lashes minus one because it said that 40 lashes would kill a man. And the problem with the way that Romans do this, I mean, we Jews say that the only thing Romans love more than killing people is to bring them to the edge of death's door and let them stay there as long as possible. And they would fashion this whip and it would dig down and tear as they pulled it back. So Jesus was led away. When he came back, I couldn't recognize him. I was far enough away, and they'd covered him in some kind of robe and had some kind of branches around his head. Looked like some mocking crown. And the crowd of religious leaders demanded he be crucified. Pilate washed his hands of him and said, then crucify him. And so Jesus picked up his own cross and walked away from the Roman governor's home and walked up the long road to the top of a hill that we call Golgotha, the place of the skull. I tried to follow as close as I could to see what was going on without seeing what was going on. And nothing in me wants to remember the images or the sounds or even the smell of that place, but it gets locked inside you. What I do like to remember are the things that Jesus said from that cross. I remember surrounded by these people who were crucifying him as Jesus hung on the cross. Father, forgive them, for they don't know what they're doing. Are you joking? They know exactly what they're doing. They don't crucify people by accident. They didn't call it out thinking it was going to teach them a lesson. Now you're forgiving people while they do this to you. I remember him saying to the women at the cross and myself as I had made it as close as I could, woman, behold your son, and you, your mother. I knew exactly what he was doing. I knew exactly what he was facing. He was admitting he was about to die. A part of me was still hoping that he would somehow release from the cross and somehow push back the Roman soldiers and somehow usher in the victory that we could so see the days before. And here he was giving me the rights of a firstborn son for his own mother. I remember at one point Jesus said from the cross that he was thirsty, and the soldiers dipped us like a sponge in his sour wine and held it up to him on a spear. And as he went to relieve his thirst, as soon as he tasted the wine, he turned his head away. And I remember thinking two things. What? Like, you're thirsty. And then I remembered back to the Last Supper when he had said, I will not drink again of the fruit of the vine till I drink it with you in the coming kingdom. I thought, is he right now in this moment, while he's forgiving his enemies and caring for his mother, also remembering the promise he made to us rather than just having a drink? And remember the last thing that Jesus said on the cross. It struck me very differently from anyone else. You see, I have this uncle who's a craftsman. He's incredibly skilled and gifted. And every time he would finish something, he would be one of those people that dinner's ready or lunch or something's going on over there. And he's just into whatever he's doing, chiseling or chipping or forming or whatever he's doing. He was so into creating. And when he was finished, whatever he was creating, he would call the family in. He would call the buyer in. He would call whoever he was about to impress, and he would hold it up for them, or he would display it for them to see. And he would always say the same thing. He'd say, it is finished. And Jesus on the cross said just that. And in that way, that made me, John, say, did he right now just create some kind of masterpiece? Have you ever been in that place where it's like your grief just can't even find the words? Where you've spent so much time crying that your eyes feel like they're swollen shut. And you wonder two things. Will I ever stop? And how much tears are in here? Where the pain inside your heart feels like it's actually going to kill you from the inside. And it's like everything you ever hoped for and dreamed for has just fallen. I was like that for days. We, those who loved and followed Jesus, were like that for days. We hid in the home of one of our friends in the city. And we hardly had anything to say, and we certainly had nothing of comfort or encouragement to offer one another at all. The topics of discussion were, do we flee right now for our lives back to Galilee or perhaps to Egypt? Because surely those who took Jesus are just going to come for us next. That's how the Jews and how the Romans deal with what they consider any kind of revolt, any kind of tyranny, any kind of treason. They take out the head and then they kill the body. The only thing we could agree on was the password for the secret knock at the door. And the only game plan we created was if a knock came that wasn't the secret knock, how we would all escape out the back door. Early in the morning, a knock came that we recognized. We were relieved. And women came in, the women, the most faithful women I had ever known in my life. There was Mary Magdalene and Joanna and Mary, the mother of James. There were some others as well. They had followed from the beginning. And while we were holed up in hiding, they went out first thing in the morning, arms full of spices to anoint the body of Jesus that had been laid in the tomb of a man named Joseph. Along the way, they thought, what are we going to do? Wait a sec. That tomb has a huge stone. A huge stone had been placed in front of the tomb, guarding the entrance. Not only that, the Jewish leaders didn't want any rumor getting around that Jesus was going to come back from the dead, so they had placed a battalion of soldiers around the tomb. When the women arrived, they told us. And they were all telling the story at once. It was very hard to get the details initially. They were all so excited. And there was something about angels, and there was something about a gardener, and I didn't even know there was a gardener there. There was something about Jesus. But it started when we got them to retell the story in some semblance of order. Near as we could tell when they came, there were no battalion of soldiers. There was a stone, but the stone had been moved completely out of the way, leaving a gaping hole into the place where the body had been laid. And sitting on the stone was an angel of the Lord who kind of nonchalantly said, "Why are you looking for the living among the dead?" He had to rise from the dead, just as it was foretold. The Son of Man would suffer and die, 3 days be in the ground, and then rise. Go and tell his disciples, and especially Peter. And they dropped their spices. The place smelt amazing after. And they ran back. Mary lingered for a moment, just crying out of the sadness that she came with and the confusion that she adopted in the moment and the joy of something about Jesus and alive. And then the gardener was there behind her and said, she thought he was the gardener. He said, "Woman, why do you weep? Who are you looking for?" She said, "Sir, please, if you've taken his body, just tell me where it is." He said one word. "Mary." "Rabboni." And Mary fell on her knees and wept. Jesus said, "Don't cling to me now. I have not returned to my Father as yet. But go and tell the others. Be the first to begin telling the world that I am alive." And the women had run back to the place where we were. And we were listening to the story, trying to take it all in, understanding about as much as we had at the Last Supper that we had with Jesus, just trying to figure out what was going on. And it sounded exciting. And they were alive in their faces and convincing in their voices. And everything about them had energy and enthusiasm and excitement. Right away, Peter and I, when they had finished the story, we looked at each other and just ran. We ran. It was like we took off for a race. I mean, it wasn't really a race. I mean, I got there first, but it wasn't a race. But we were racing, but it wasn't a race. But I was there. I mean, it took them a while, actually, to get there. I was a bit surprised, but I went to the entrance of the tomb, and I saw the stone rolled away, and the place smelled amazing. And I looked inside, and it was so dark inside. Peter made it huffing and puffing and just went right inside the tomb. And I followed him, and we saw, as our eyes adjusted, the strips of cloth that had been laid around the body were just cast aside, and there was no body there. And we went back outside the tomb, and we ran back. We told the others that it's got to be true. It's got to be true. Some from our midst went out, and they started hearing rumors. They kind of went on the sly and listened to the crowds of people. The first rumor that they heard was that, "Oh, I heard that the disciples stole his body." What? We were locked up for fear of death. We weren't stealing bodies. The other rumor that we heard was that the battalion of soldiers had scattered not on order, but by invitation of the presence of an angel of the Lord that had come down like an earthquake. And they dropped in fear and ran for their lives. And the story was echoing all around Jerusalem already. We stayed in that place of wonder and excitement until evening. And two of our friends, Cleopas and another friend, came back. See, they had been part of the group that decided to flee. And so they were trying to make their way to a town called Emmaus, just outside of Jerusalem, about a 10-kilometer walk. They wanted to get there before dark. And on the way, they were having that conversation like friends do who are in the middle of grief. What do we do? What's gone on? What do we believe? What are we going to do now? How do we process? And this man kind of joined them on their journey, as strangers do, and said, "What are you talking about?" Said, "Are you the only one in Jerusalem who doesn't know about this? Jesus of Nazareth, the prophet, powerful in word and deed. He's been amazing the nation for years now. He was just crucified. What's more than that, just this morning, some of our women went to the tomb to see who he was and saw angels and no soldiers. And now there's stories that he's risen from the dead. And they said the stranger almost scolded them. Well, yeah. Haven't you read the scriptures? And he went back through the prophets and through the sacred scriptures and pulled out stories that illustrated that the Son of Man, the Messiah, must suffer and die to be raised to life again. They made it to Emmaus before nightfall just. He was going on to somewhere else. He didn't say where, but it wasn't there. They said, no, please come and stay with us. And so they prepared a table and were about to sit down and have a meal. And before they did, he said, can I give thanks? And they said, certainly. And he took the bread and he lifted it up to heaven. And he broke it and he gave thanks. And right there, their eyes were open and they recognized that this was no stranger. This was Jesus. And right then he vanished from before their eyes. And they had been hurrying to get to Emmaus before nightfall. And now night had come and they ran back. And so we were together in the room and these people came and they gave us the secret knock and we let them in. And they were more out of breath than the women were, even more than Peter, which was kind of amazing. And they came in. And they shared this incredible story. And while they were there, a voice came from this side that said, peace be with you. And the whole group turned to look and see Jesus in our midst. In our midst. And he forgot to use the door. He didn't even use the secret knock. And he was right there. And he said, peace I give to you. My peace I leave with you. He said, receive the Holy Spirit and stay in Jerusalem. You are going to be clothed with power from on high and you will be my witnesses. He invited us to see his scars. And then he sat down. He said, do you have anything to eat? We're like, yeah, we have some fish. And we all looked. Watching him, we're getting ready to eat. And he was always a bit of a goof. He would take the fish and go, and we would be leaning in. And they'd say, do you have something to drink also? Someone would get him some water and he'd take it again. And we'd be leaning in. He'd say, do you have any salt? And he got a sly look across his face as he ate in front of us. And it was the most astounding thing I've ever seen. The Pharisees who fought to eradicate his name had accidentally sought and established his fame. The leaders who had longed to wipe his memory from the earth had inadvertently been used by God to create his legacy for generations. And the demons who desired to destroy his doctrines of truth and freedom and life and liberty had been used like pawns of God to bring about the display of his greatest divinity. Friends, it was not just a resurrection that happened at some point in history. It's a resurrection that's happening every day someone else believes. Friends, it's a story. It's a story for we who are here in this room. It's a story for every generation. It's a story for every heart. The heart that believes is the heart that experiences the Jesus who is alive and well in this generation and for all generations. It is a song of a new hallelujah. It is a song of a brand new revelation. It is a song of the King of Kings and the Lord of Lords. Let your heart sing.